on my own, pretending she's beside me, all alone. I walk with her till morning. Without her, I feel her arms around me. And when I lose my way, I close my eyes, and she has found me. You found me.
This special edition of Coping was produced by Judy Bartlestone and Katrina Becker for Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Today, we are honored and privileged to have with us Dr. Michael Markson, about to celebrate his 80th birthday, a quiet man who came to this country from Lithuania at the age of 9. If you do the math, you will realize he is a survivor of the Holocaust, and therein lies a tale. The brutal storm of World War II shaped this quiet and brave man as a child, but so did the unwavering, undaunted courage and resilience of a mother who never gave up, a woman whose raw courage and determination saved her son, her little boy. Welcome, Michael Markson, to Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
All right. You are or were a successful endodontist, a father, grandfather, and a tennis player. In all of this, although I've known you as my husband's tennis partner for many years, you are a quiet man who never mentioned his background as a Holocaust survivor. Only recently did I realize, during a dinner conversation, that you came here at 9 years of age from Lithuania. Tell our Sun Sounds audience a little about the beginnings of that journey. You were how old when your mother had to leave you?
I was probably a 3 or 4. At that time, the Germans were invading Poland and Lithuania, and my family and many others were assembled in a ghetto. And for some time, my mother realized that it was probably not a safe place for children in the future, so she was able to arrange for me to live with a Catholic family who owned a farm, who she had known, and she was able to smuggle me out of the ghetto and arrange for me to live with them.
Well, what happened in terms of her smuggling you out? When we were talking earlier, you said that you were actually in the proverbial, some kind of vegetable cart?
Yes. I was put into a push cart and covered with vegetables and potatoes and brought out of the ghetto. And then when we got close to the farm, I was taken out of the push cart and kind of placed in the hands of the people who owned the farm. I was obviously very upset because I do remember that I told my mother, I'm sure she was happy to hear this, that I hope I never see her again and that I hated her for sending me away. So,
That's so powerful and so piercing. And of course, she went on, but you were so little, you didn't know. What kind of fence was that? Was that a picket fence or a wire fence?
It was a wire fence, and it had a hole in it because I just passed through it. And I went that way, and my mother and the other people that were helping with the pushcart went back to the ghetto.
And that was the last you saw of her for many years.
Yes, I didn't see her again until the war ended in 1945.
And so you were placed there in what, 1941, Michael, or?
It was probably around 1941, between 41 and 42 somewhere.
Well, let's get a little geography here with the history. The location of Lithuania, I know it's north of Poland.
It's one of the Baltic states. Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, they're all on the border of the Baltic Sea. On one side is Poland, and the other side is Russia.
And your mother had some Russian background, did you tell me?
Well, my mother was born in Russia. She was born in St. Petersburg, so she was fluent in Russian and Lithuanian and some other languages as well. What she had told me afterwards, she ended up in a concentration camp, and she and another woman somehow escaped. And my mother then, because she did have a Russian background, she joined the Russian army for protection. So that was how she survived.
She was a survivor, no doubt about it. Well, mm-hmm. How did she get to Lithuania then if she was born in St. Petersburg? Let's go back a little.
She, somewhere along the line, she met my father.
Ah.
And I think he was from Lithuania, so that's how she ended up living there. And that's how I obviously was born there.
So that was back and forth, and it was a good thing in a way that she did have the Russian background. We'll never know how she escaped from the concentration camp, because you said she really didn't want to talk about it later on in life.
No, she didn't want to talk about things like that, because what happened was that my father, who was a textile engineer, he was out of the country at the time that the invasion was occurring. And when he returned to Lithuania, my mother knew that he had returned, but she never got to see him again because he was captured by either the Germans or Lithuanian sympathizers. So she never got to see him. She tried to bribe some of the people who were holding prisoners, but they just took advantage of her, took her jewelry, and never really allowed her to see her husband or set him free either. So he was obviously killed in Lithuania.
It's hard memories, and we are grateful to you for sharing them, because as it's often said, you know, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. So it's appreciated that you are telling us this. Now, I know Lithuania went back and forth, was from Germany to Russia and then secretly transferred to the Soviet, and the land was nationalized. So mm-hmm. What happened to you when you were on that farm? Evidently, you couldn't stay there for the whole time. How long do you think you were on the farm with the family that did help you, which we call righteous Gentiles, those who with no thought of their own for themselves helped Jews?
I'm not sure. I may have been there 2 or 3 years. They were really risking their lives to harbor me, because I know that occasionally Germans would come by for food and whatever, searching, and I would be hiding in the hayloft in the barn quite a number of times. I know that happened, but I don't know what happened to them during the war. I kind of assume that after the Germans invaded Russia and the Russians were driving them back towards the end of the war, that they may have lost a farm, because I ended up in an orphanage in Lithuania.
So you had to be quiet in the ghetto, you had to be quiet in the pushcart, you had to be quiet and hidden at the farm, and then somehow you were brought to an orphanage. Maybe, we can only conjecture, maybe by the people who owned the farm, maybe by the people who took you in?
I would assume that that's probably what happened. There were some other people in that city who were aware of my presence, because when my mother returned after the war, she was able to find out where I was.
How did your mother return? Do you know? I mean, where was she coming from? The edges of Lithuania or Russia? And how did she get there? Did she walk? Did she go on a truck?
I don't know. I assume she came from Russia, because that's where she, mm-hmm. you know, ended up. But I don't know how she was transported back to Lithuania. But she showed up at the orphanage with, I just remember she showed up with a bag of rolls, and I think she brought it there to share with, for the other children, but I think I probably got a few of those for myself. Because I know I had one in each hand, so.
So to this day, probably bread or rolls is one of your favorite foods.
Oh, it is. It is. I am really, bread is like dessert for me.
Isn't that interesting? And again, we go back to how you're shaped and formed by your childhood. Somebody else might want a gourmet meal and you were just happy maybe with some rolls or homemade bread or pastries. So when she came there to the orphanage, we'll skip ahead a little. Did you recognize her? Can you tell our audience about that?
No, I don't think I recognized her at all. Fortunately, she recognized me. And, you know, in later pictures, we do look alike, so I was always sure that she got the right kid.
All right, so she found you somehow. I think you had mentioned the shape of your face was the same, and she did find you. Do you remember if she hugged you or held you, or do you remember anything else about that other than the smell of the rolls and the taste?
Well, I do remember that she, I guess I wasn't in the cleanest condition because I do remember that she afterwards, you know, I must have had a bath and she was combing my hair and I think I had, I don't know if I had lice or bed bugs or something because she had this really fine tooth comb and I remember she was combing my head a lot just to clean me up. So
that's what a mother would do. That's right. Just, it's amazing to me though that she was able to find you. And you said there was a friend at one time with whom she escaped?
Yes, and somewhere on our way from Lithuania, we ended up traveling from Lithuania through Poland and Czechoslovakia to the southern part of Germany, to Munich in Germany. And there was another woman along with us, and that was probably the same woman who escaped from the concentration camp with her. So
that's unusual. We hear so many horror stories. Not that yours is not a horror story, but the fact that these two women were able to stick together and that your mother was able to come back and to find you. And what was your mother's name again?
My mother's name was Clara.
Clara. And your name is Michael here, but what was your name in Lithuania?
In Lithuania, my name was Miron.
Miron. All right. I suppose that would translate as Myron, or?
Yeah, it would translate as Myron, and then later on it became Michael.
Of course. All right. I also asked you, what was the aid society that helped you and your mother finally get from Europe to the United States?
It was HIAS, H-I-A-S. I think it's Hebrew International Aid Society.
All right, international, or maybe immigration.
Or maybe immigration.
Maybe
yeah.
immigration.
It was HIAS, yeah.
So they
that could be immigration, yes.
Well,
that sounds even better.
That's and that was back in the 40s. I think that society is still here.
Yes, they are still here because I get mailings from them and I've made some contributions to them. So
I can understand why. I also asked you, and I was interested in your answer, and I'm sure our audience and even our people here in the studio would be interested. I said to you, was that terrible when you came on this big boat, the SS Ernie Pyle, which, as we both know, is named after the great war correspondent from World War II, Ernie Pyle. But when you came on that ship, was it terrifying? Was it terrible? And your answer surprised me, so I'll ask you again. Was it terrible?
No, I think that was probably the best time I had up to that age in my life. I mean, it was there was a boat, and there was all the food you could eat, and it was just wonderful.
And did you tell me there were movies or films?
They showed American movies. I remember that. I happen to remember there was a movie called Stars and Stripes with marching music, and it was, you know, real flag waving American thing, so it was very impressive.
So you liked that, and you knew that you were coming to a safe place.
Right.
It's just, the whole thing is just amazing to me, that this kind of story. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us before I go on with all my 20 questions here?
Well, I did want to mention to you, all of this occurred while my mother was in her It started when she was in her early 20s, and it went through the time that she was in her 20s, and she was just an amazingly exceptional and brave woman to go through the war and to finally find me and to be able to navigate our way to the United States.
Oh, yeah. She was very young. I mean, what you wonder, was that just something in her DNA? Were her parents like this? How was she able to do this when others could not?
Well, she was a survivor, obviously, so yeah. She managed to do it.
And you are an only child?
Yes.
All right. So let's take it when you got from the boat, when you got off the Ernie Pyle, and that was where? In
New York City.
Okay, so you didn't have to go through Ellis Island or anything like that?
No, I don't think they probably weren't using Ellis Island after the war.
You're probably right. That makes sense. And who met you there? This was in what, 1947?
1947. It was June 24th, 1947.
Okay.
The reason I remember the date is that there was an article in the New York Mirror, which is I don't think it exists any longer. It was a newspaper in New York City.
And there was an article in there?
There was an article and a photograph of my mother and myself.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Do you still have that?
I do.
That's good. That's a good thing. That's a precious memory.
Mm-hmm.
And that article was there because they chose you as the people who came, or?
I guess so. My mother happened to be a very beautiful woman, and I think it probably must have attracted the photographers.
Well, that's probably true, and you know what?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So when you got there, were you going to Brooklyn? Did I get that right or wrong?
Yes. My mother had three uncles who lived in the United States. They were brothers of her mother. And I should mention also that everyone else in my mother's and my father's family perished in Europe. None of them. But the three brothers of my grandmother must have come to the United States probably well before World War II.
Yeah, before Kristallnacht probably were prescient. They just thought, better get out of here.
All right. So one lived in Brooklyn, and we went to, I think that part of the reason that we were able to come to the United States is at that time, I think you had to be sponsored by someone who lived here so that you wouldn't end up becoming a ward of the state or of the government.
I see.
So the uncle we went to in Brooklyn, we stayed with him for a while, and then we traveled, I remember, by train to Pittsburgh to see another uncle, and then we traveled by train again to Chicago to visit the third uncle. But then we came back and settled in New York City.
In New York. And mm-hmm. I have a note here about the Blackstone Hotel.
Yes, the uncle in Chicago lived in the Blackstone Hotel. That was his residence. And a number of years ago, I happened to be in Chicago, and I asked a cab driver if the Blackstone Hotel was still in existence. And we happened to be nearby. It was downtown, and he pointed to a building that was going up, and he says that's where it was. That they were, I guess, they were either renovating it or changing it to a residence rather than a hotel. So
you didn't get to see that particular memory.
Right.
But you also mentioned to me, as you came to the United States, I asked you about school and how the kids were. And you mentioned something about you were good in math, which they called arithmetic then. Can you tell us a little about your experience when you came here and you had to start school?
I didn't speak English, obviously, but I think I must have been placed in the second grade. The only thing that I really could do well was arithmetic, math, because obviously you didn't have to know any particular language to
right.
be good in arithmetic, so that was a strong point. And I was able to pick up English pretty quickly because the following year I was in the sixth grade, which is where I belonged for my age.
So you were in the fifth grade or sixth grade? fifth?
I don't remember the fifth grade. I just remember sixth grade because I graduated from PS 86 in Manhattan, and that was the sixth grade. And then I went on to junior high school, seventh grade.
You were all right, and by then you had become a baseball fan. Is that correct?
Oh, I was. Well, having lived in Brooklyn for a while, I was a Brooklyn Dodger fan.
And then you could yell and cheer, and you didn't have to be quiet, right?
That was right. And when I go to football games here sometimes, and I'm not very quiet there either. So,
good to know. Those right. Cardinals better appreciate you. Right. So you didn't know too much about your mother's escape, except that somehow she got out. You don't know if she would have been in Dachau or Auschwitz or Stutthof. And her name was Clara, but did you tell me it was also Kayla, or did I get that wrong?
Well, that's her. That was her Hebrew name.
Okay, so that was her Hebrew name.
Yes.
All right, and somehow she found you. And what did she do when she came to the States?
She worked in the garment district in New York. I think she was a seamstress, but then she also began working in a physician's office. So I don't know if she was if she was a receptionist or if she was an assistant or whatever. But
so
she did work.
Once again, the resilience of this young woman. It's just you have pictures of her besides the photograph from the from the newspaper.
Yes, I do.
She must have been very beautiful. Was she tall?
I think she was tall. She was. She must have been about 5'6" or 7", maybe. I'm not sure.
All right. So her background, maybe even her looks, her height, all of this probably contributed to the fact that she could get work and she could go to Russia, where Jews were treated somewhat better than, certainly anything was better than the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans were very anti-Soviet anyway, weren't they?
Well, they were. At first, of course, they had Hitler and Stalin had a pact, a non-invasion pact, but then Hitler kind of changed his mind and decided he was going to invade Russia, which was a major mistake on his part.
Yeah, it's good for us to get a little of that history in there. So there was a pact. Yeah, is that the same pact that we're talking about? A pact in Lithuania was assigned to Germany and then transferred?
Well, that may have been maybe after the war, because the Russians kind of annexed all the Baltic states and part of and Poland and half of Germany. You know, they had the Berlin Wall. So
that's right. It all ties in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So when you back to school, when you went to school, you were living with your uncle at the time when you were in Brooklyn?
Just for a short time, because my mother started working and we were able to get our own apartment.
That's remarkable. And here, you know, today we have people, well, we won't even get into the politics of today, but that's amazing. So she was able to get her own apartment. And you were in school learning English. You also mentioned you remembered you thought you had the chicken pox while you were here.
Yes, I think I just remember, I think a short time after I arrived here, I had the chicken pox while we were still living with her uncle, or my uncle as well, then in Brooklyn. Because I remember I was kept in a dark room, so.
Yeah, that sounds like chicken pox.
Yeah.
And maybe that's when you said you didn't remember anybody reading to you, but there was a radio. Maybe that's when you heard the ball games?
Oh, I did. Yeah, I used to, it was before television, so listening to the radio was a big thing. Ball games, they had nice mystery stories and all sorts of interesting things on the radio at the time.
So you learned to be a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
And you were still quiet, though, I'm sure. And part of it, I would think, would be you don't know. You always had to be fearful of somebody knowing that you were Jewish.
Well, that's true, because I think even as a young adult, I was still kind of hesitant about broadcasting the fact that I was Jewish. So it was I think it's just a fear that I had for quite some time.
Well, these fears don't go away overnight. It's and sometimes don't go away for decades. But this is the first time that you have publicly told your story. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. I may have told a few people privately some of these things, but never publicly.
Do you feel that it's all right now? Do you feel like safe, or you want people to know? How do you feel about saying this publicly?
I feel safe now. I think that it's important for people to know what went on. I mean, this is just my story, and there are others that were a lot worse. But unfortunately, history is still repeating itself. I mean, there are all sorts of genocides occurring across the world.
You're right.
I don't think we learn anything from history.
Well, Michael, I want to thank you for telling us your compelling story and bringing history alive for Sun Sounds of Arizona audience. Your quiet courage and the indomitable fighting spirit of your mother as she searched for you, never giving up through the war years, is a journey that we're privileged to hear from you. The triumph of good over evil as your mother steadfastly fought her way through the horrors of concentration camp and the terrors of World War II are true examples of the ability of one person to make a difference. Your mother, as the Bible says, was a woman more precious than rubies. This story will echo in our hearts forever. Special gratitude to you and also to Anita Markson for bringing this true story to my attention, and to Daniel Gilmore for his poignant rendition of On My Own, and to Cynthia Ellick for her powerful rendition of I Found You. Thank you, Michael Markson.
Thank you for having me.
I found you, and you were hiding, till I came along and showed you where you belong. I found you when no one else was looking. How did I know? I found you when no one else was looking. How did I know just where you would be? I guess that I saw what nobody could see. I found you. I found you.